Today, my Neptune's in Capricorn and my Sun is in Gemini. Why astrology is having a moment. And Sophia Tarkor with a poem for Christmas. Anna, what is your star sign?
Aries.
Aries.
And double Aries.
Amna Modin is a news reporter for The Guardian. Actually, I've just looked up your horoscope for today and it's really accurate considering what we're doing. Because it says all eyes will be on you today, but don't succumb to stage fright. These eyes belong to very friendly, supportive people.
Oh.
This year, Amna started reporting on the rise of astrology and witchcraft.
That's what I like about it, because every now and then it will be like eerily accurate and you're just there like, and that feeling it gives you.
I don't want to put any pressure on you, but this says at the end, use your time in the limelight to make big things start happening. Let's start the interview. From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. I'm a Gemini. And today in Focus, why do people love astrology? Why did you decide to write about astrology?
Because everywhere I looked, people were really into it.
Welcome back to my channel. If you also blame everything on your zodiac sign, this video's for you.
It seems really daunting. And yes, birth charts can look like super complicated trigonometry problems.
Hi, welcome to Soul Whispers Tarot. I'm back again with another pick card reading. This reading is, will he or she make a move on you?
And I was kind of taken back by, you know, friends who are scientists, through those who are teachers, really looking into their horoscopes and discussing astrology memes. And I just thought, you know, why has this become such a popular thing, particularly when, you know, it's massively disproved by science. There's no rationality behind it. But I think through my reporting, I realized, well, that's kind of the point.
And where did you start your astrology investigation?
I was actually having a roast with my friends. And
where all good investigations should start.
And then, yeah, they were just like, oh, let's just tell me what time you were born. And I was like, what? Why? So I gave these extremely personal details and just texting my mum, what time was I born? And then they just kind of laid out my like birth chart, and it was quite funny to go through them saying, oh, your main star is in Aries and it means you're really hot tempered. And I just thought that moment was quite fun between like three friends just going through things that like, yeah, you're a terrible person in this way, but you're quite nice in this way. And then they kind of showed me all the memes.
It was right. The next step was the memes.
That is when I fell in quite hard into this.
I've been loving astrology memes for quite some time now. They've always been around, but now they're really like skyrocketing. I just see them.
Ooh, this one is how to tell if the signs have a crush on you. Let's see. Taurus makes you food.
When you find out why Leo is being so moody, you just wanted attention. I think this is so cute because Leos aren't afraid to just ask for it.
They're everywhere. Like, I see them all over social media, Instagram, Twitter, and it feels like actually in the last 12 months, I see them all the time now.
Yeah, they've completely saturated. Some of those meme pages are run by teenagers and there's like over a million followers. And yeah, I think largely the point of it is to make fun of people, to like roast your friends. And, you know, I'll open Instagram and I'll have like five messages from different people about how much of a terrible person I am because I'm an Aries.
I mean, I'm a Gemini.
Oh,
so
my
it's
God.
The worst. It's the worst.
Yeah, apparently. Very two-faced.
Very two-faced, very duplicitous. I mean, don't even get me started on a Gemini man.
Oh, God.
Who did you speak to for your piece?
Oh, loads of young women. There's definitely like a gender bias.
And it is millennial women typically, yeah, isn't yeah, it? Who are engaging most with astrology and tarot.
I think so. Like definitely between teenagers, but largely between 25 to 35 are really taking this on board. Young millennial women have like just lost faith in capitalism and the political institutions and turned to astrology, which might be a bit too simplistic of an explanation, but I think there's a lot of truth to that as well.
Where else are people exploring astrology and how do we know that this is becoming more and more popular?
So there's these new women digital sites like Broadly and Gaudam who have now started to have their own horoscope section. Vice has its own horoscope app. When I spoke to Gaudam And their editor there said that it's massively increased traffic. So I think it definitely goes way past just the memes. You know, people are becoming astrologers. People are doing training, online training for tarot card readings. I think those who kind of kindly to say have gone off the deep end really then get into like witchcrafts and spells as well.
So I thought it'd be really fun if I just shared with you the apps that I use. I've gone through a lot of Zodiac and Star apps, and I finally found the ones that I believe are the most accurate and work best for me overall.
And also there's been a huge kind of uptick in the number of people downloading astrology apps as well.
Yeah, like apps like CoStar have become extremely popular because it just kind of, you know, speaking to astrologers who did this in the late 90s and early noughties, they say actually creating a birth chart would normally have taken them hours, several days of work, but now you just input all of that information to a computer and it comes across instantly, and then now people have thought, all right, let's just get AI technology involved in this, and people are able to get quite weirdly specific daily horoscopes. And with CoStar, it's kind of become really popular for sending quite mean notifications. The other day it told me, try not to be a B word today, so I was like, okay. The positive side of these kind of apps is it's meant to make you more mindful. You're meant to think more about your day, and you sit down and think about your own behavior and kind of challenge it in quite a constructive way. But I think the apps also realize the meaner the notifications are, the more likely they are to go viral on social media.
I'd also been reading that CoStar actually had hired poets to write their content for them.
That is perfectly fitting with CoStar's aesthetic, even the way it's presented to us. I think it's just, you know, very sleek.
But do we know how much money this kind of industry can make and, you know, how much profit these apps are making?
It's like a multi-billion dollar industry already. A lot of the money that they're making is largely through investment right now. And I think these apps are trying to think of how they can make a profit from this huge interest. But I think a lot of people who, let's say, were like the original astrologers find that kind of these tech companies coming in quite worrying, because they think it makes it very capitalist, and it moves away from the real what astrology should be, which again is belief in yourself, your community, and how you can better yourself, and that moment of mindfulness.
And it's not just astrology. You also spoke to women who are becoming interested in witchcraft. Why?
People are turning to witchcraft as a way, as an extension, actually, of their feminist organising, which I find really interesting. The people I've spoke to who do call themselves witches, they're really interesting activists who do this because they fundamentally believe that women are being disempowered in the society we live in. And this is one way of being able to reconnect with yourself, reconnect with your community. A lot more Black women and Asian women are involved in witchcraft is because of a deep frustration that, yeah, society doesn't represent them, it's not meeting their needs, and it's massively disempowering them.
Yes, because I think a lot of this, to me, interest in the occult, astrology, does obviously stem from a society that is becoming less and less interested or is relying less and less on organized religion. Yeah. It seems to be a kind of logical replacement for a lot of people who still need that structure in their lives.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's a really good way to just sit down and think about yourself a little bit and think about the impact you're having on the world and having on your friends. That kind of self-reflection, regardless of whether you do it through astrology or witchcraft or whether, you know, you're reading self-help book, I think fundamentally is a good thing. Like thinking about what you're saying to other people and how you're coming across is really, really important. I think people do want like something a bit more solid to believe in because they have just lost faith in so many other things, and that in and of itself is quite sad. And I think we do have to have more serious conversations about trust in politics and trust in other important societal institutions.
And do you think that it is a concern or is a thought at all for people who have become interested in horoscopes and astrology that it is a pseudoscience? It isn't based in any fact, it's not proven.
Yeah, I think obviously, if there are people who are really unwell and some astrologer tells them that they're going to fix all their problems, that is deeply worrying. I think, you know, it's no replacement for modern medicine. But at the same time, I think most people that are into it are like, wink, wink, we know it's not real, but wink, 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 this is so you.
One, two, three, four, five.
That is perfect. How are you today, Felicity?
I'm very well, thank you.
One person with a different perspective is a woman who used to be an astrologer herself, Felicity Carter, who at 19 dropped out of a science degree at university to concentrate on honing her psychic talents.
I used to work at a shop in the Rocks, which is Sydney's historic district, and I sat in the attic so people would have to come up the stairs. I would ask them if they would prefer a tarot card reading or an astrology reading. Now, I preferred doing astrology because I was very proud of my ability. And if they said yes, we would print a chart from a computer. Mostly in the 90s, people said no. They thought astrology was too sort of scientific and they wanted tarot cards. But if they chose astrology, I would sit down and I would read their horoscope. Now, a horoscope is a map of the heavens from the moment that you're born. It shows you where the two luminaries, the sun and the moon were, and also where all the planets were in relation to your birth. And then if you were looking for the year ahead, you would do something called a solar progression chart, which is you'd look at how things have changed since they were born and what was happening in the particular year they were asking about.
How did you become an astrologer?
A girlfriend of mine, her stepfather ran the Sydney Astrology Centre. We used to go along for a year and did astrology class. Astrology is really, really complicated. So you think like you're really learning something and you have special insight and wisdom. So I spent quite a few years studying and going to classes and going to lectures and so on.
You say you think that you're learning something. Did you think, looking back on it now, that maybe you weren't?
No, it doesn't matter what you're doing. In the end, you're shifting metaphors around on the page and it doesn't really help you with anything.
Why do you think you as a scientist were attracted to something that so obviously wasn't a science?
It partly was just a lot of fun. And also, I think a lot of us want magic in our lives. I think if you're a creative type of person or if you're sensitive, then astrology and other pseudosciences offer you a kind of magical world, which is really attractive. Also, it promises you self-knowledge as well. And if you're slightly neurotic, which I certainly was at that age, it promises you that you can gaze into your horoscope and you can understand yourself better and you can see which times are going to be better and worse for you. So it promises you this amazing knowledge that's very attractive.
You practiced this for 5 years and then one day you decided to give it all up. Why?
Yes, I came to realise that people who said I was accurate were claiming that I had said things that I hadn't. And that really bothered me. And it became very clear that people were listening to me, but they were adding their own interpretation into what I was saying. And the time that it really ended it for me was a man came to see me and he looked terrible. He had very red eyes. He had very sweaty skin. I think his hands were shaking. And he said he was under a curse and he wanted me to lift it. So I said, okay, tell me what it's about. And he went through some sort of sensory hallucinations that he was experiencing, which he said were getting worse. And he said he'd been to see a Catholic priest who'd done an exorcism, but not only had it not lifted the curse, but things were sort of going downhill fast. Now, at the time, my second job was I was a medical typist during my student holidays. And that very week, I'd been working for a neurologist. And I'd been typing up letters about people who had very rare brain tumours. And one of the letters, almost word for word, gave me the same symptoms that this guy was telling me about. Now, I'm not a doctor. I can't diagnose clearly. But I thought to myself, this guy's really sick. So I said to him, I think you need to go and see a doctor. And he was furious. He got very, very aggressive and he shouted at me and he called me a fraud and a fake and then he went downstairs to get his money back. And it was a very aggressive and upsetting encounter that left me feeling very, very shaken. And so after that, I thought, I can't do this anymore. And that was the end of it.
We've said it's a pseudoscience. None of it is based in actual science. But is the practice of being interested in astrology and tarot and witchcraft, is it harmful if people are getting something fulfilling from it?
Yeah, I actually don't think tarot can do much harm in the end. And actually, I don't necessarily think astrology would. It's when you take them seriously, I don't think they open up your life at all. I think that they send you walking around the same circle because it can't open up your life. It's pseudoscience, it doesn't offer you any really deep insights. People want to sell you stuff. People only go into astrology and New Age things as professionals because they want to make money from it. It's primarily a consumer behavior, in a way that other spiritual traditions are not.
Do you think, Felicity, that this is about age? You became an astrologer at a younger age, and a lot of the people who are becoming interested in astrology now are millennials or younger. Do you think this is something that you have perhaps in a sense grown out of?
Yes. Like I said, it appeals particularly to a certain type of, disaffected or, somebody who's grappling with issues or who's having terrible broken hearts, which is something that, we still get broken hearts, but you do tend to grow out of that, that raw emotion that you experience in your late teens and 20s.
You're not practicing anymore, but we're living through very turbulent times and we're at the end of the year now, looking ahead to a new year. Do you have any predictions for what might happen in the world in the next 12 months?
Okay, well, I'll give you an astrological prediction. On the 2nd of December, the planet Jupiter passed into the sign of Capricorn. Now, the last time it did that was during the global financial crisis. So make of that what you will, but it is going to make some very ugly transits to Saturn, the planet of restriction, and Pluto, the planet of death, in the next year. So an astrologer would say we're going to have a transformational year in 2020.
The planet of death. Felicity, that sounds very bad.
It is. It's really bad. But if I was a modern astrologer, I would say it's an opportunity for transformation.
Oh, on that note, Felicity, thank you so much for speaking to me.
You're welcome.
That was Felicity Carter and Amna Modin. Both have written about astrology for The Guardian. Read their pieces on the website. Coming up, spoken word artist Sophia Tarkour. Now, for many of us, it's Christmas next week. We all have our own ways of marking this sometimes fraught festive period. The spoken word poet, Sophia Tarkour, shares how she'll be celebrating.
Dad always finds the perfect one line. Every year, he insists that all of our Jewish and Muslim neighbours come over for what he calls a special Sunday lunch. But a tree, too much tinsel and turkey later, I'm not sure he's fooling anyone. But each year our neighbours still spill their laughter onto our sofa. The blend of accents makes it difficult to differentiate when everyone's mouth is full of Mum's famous roast and hers is full of, "Would you like some more?" As the food puts itself to rest and anchors us all to our chairs, it chains us to stories of how each couple first met. Mum and Dad disagree again over who made the first move. The first generation Brits teach us of a love that knew only to rebel, to survive, and a tear meets someone's eye, and then a tissue meets someone's hand, and an unopened WhatsApp meets my brother's gaze, and he realises he loses nothing by being honest in what he says to her. I wonder if my neighbours know that they saved her from a Christmas of question marks. We care a little more about Granddad's jokes and pretend that we don't know how they end. We laugh with the laugh of love of watching him lean back into what he's led to believe was a great and completely new performance. And then as the evening pulls in and people slowly start copying whoever's leaving and we all try to escape the cleaning, but at least one of the siblings has been softened enough to help. I try to freeze the day's moment in stillness. The parted Christmas crackers, where a joke was told, an answer was seen, a cousin asks a parent why they always cheat. The well-used stove, I wonder if it will ever know the amount of love and joy that it both creates and holds. Uncle Isaac, who may or may not be my real uncle, always takes the evening to make a bedroom of the living room. His feet find a lap of an auntie who lost the battle to the third helping of turkey. He calls home. He laughs like a boy with his childhood friends. Across the globe today, they all feel the same. The equator line has wrapped its limbs around us all, and we all fall into the charm of the season. This year, it may have been rough to us all, but it's a season to soften, not callous. Isn't this the time to be our most kind? Surely we deserve these moments.
That was Sophia Tarkle. Thanks to her, Amna Modin and Felicity Carter. Today's episode was produced by Chika Ayres and Courtney Youssef. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier, and the executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. Next week, Anushka will bring you a few of our favourite episodes from the past 12 months, and we'll find out what's happened to some of those we've interviewed. On Monday, the Hong Kong protester we spoke to in October reflects on how 6 months of activism has changed him and his city. I hope you all have an amazing Christmas and a very happy new year. I'll be back in 2020.